This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh with the top business stories of the day. Now, this Friday, the 1st of September, foreign tourists will be hit with a 10 ringgit tax at hotels across Malaysia. To comment on this controversial tax, we have on the line Dato Siew Kah Wai, chairman of the Malaysian Tourism Promotion Board.
Hi, Dato. Good morning. Joyce here. So I'm going to jump right into it. The tourism tax is going to take off this Friday. Are we all set?
I think when you say all set, the customs has been doing their work for the last 3 to 4 months, telling people the tax will be implemented. It's only the timing. So since middle of August, they have been doing some road shows and telling all the hoteliers to please register for the tax. As I understand it, 3,000 to 4,000 probably have registered. It's not the full 100%. And that will take a bit of time, the smaller hotels especially. All the bigger hotels, I think, have registered for the tax. The collection is done by customs. It's not done by tourism. Please bear that in mind. So the readiness to collect is really at the hands of the customs.
Right. So with the latest tourist statistics, how much do you think, you know, is expected to be raised from this?
Well, it's considerably less because I think the government took the right line by not taxing Malaysians as we try to promote local tourism. So I think over the next 12 months, we are looking at anywhere from 150 to 250 million. I think the minister has mentioned about 200 odd million tax.
Now, Dato, this is Han here. So just last week, we spoke to the Malaysian Association of Hotel Owners on the Breakfast Grill. Now, they still don't know how this money will be used. Do you know how this tourism tax will be used?
There are a series of initiatives which the minister is going through. There will be initiatives which are state-based, like Sabah, Sarawak, etc. There will be national initiatives, which will be to promote tourism. There will also be initiatives to give the tourists a better experience here in Malaysia. So it's a whole series of initiatives now. A lot of it will depend on how much money we actually collect. We have a whole list of initiatives. Which ones will be implemented will depend on which ones are more attractive to the state, the country, as well as the tourists.
But Dato, as it stands, you know, it seems that the details of how these initiatives will be implemented, that is still rather scarce because even today on the Malaysian Reserve's front page, you've got the Sarawak state government still talking about having to engage the federal government for a larger share of the pie. So who's going to be driving the details of these initiatives?
It will be done from ministry together with the stakeholders. You see, if we... let's be frank. If we say there are 15 initiatives, everybody has different interests. It is better to know we will do the ones that are probably easy to do, which are the overseas promotion. Then after that, we will see how the rest of the money is to be allocated. The minister has actually spoken about this issue, about how to share the tourism tax out. There will be some which are across the board. Some will be state-based. Everything depends on driving tourists to Malaysia and driving tourists within Malaysia to other parts of Malaysia.
All right, we've also got the Malaysian Association of Hotel Owners asking this, that since they are having to do all the groundwork there, they are the ones collecting the taxes as opposed to, say, being collected at the airports. You know, how much of those revenue, that tax revenue, will be allocated to hotels specifically?
As I understand it, it's a very simple process for the hotels nightly or weekly to do the filing. They do GST as well. The main issue is they will benefit the most when tourist numbers rise. That's where their intangible return come from. And when they say collection, it's just clicking onto the bill. Excuse me, it's not like they go and physically ask the guest, please pay me this amount of money and all that. No, it's not. The actual process is quite simple. Or at least it should be, according to customs. So it's just filling, it's just the billing. It's actually added to the bill, right? And then it will just be transferred to customs, the money, and together with the return. But when tourist numbers go up, whether international or local, the biggest beneficiaries will be hotels and shopping, food, even transportation.
Thank you very much. That was Dato' Siew Kaw Wai. We begin with, of course, a well-known Malaysian brand, AirAsia. It's set for a shake-up. A new company will assume AirAsia's listing status here in Malaysia, while its Indonesian unit is set for a backdoor listing on the Indonesian Stock Exchange.
Right. So under this plan, shares in the Brussels-listed AirAsia will be transferred to the holding company, to a holding company, without increasing the number of issued shares. So this will be done via a share swap, and it will require approval from regulators and shareholders alike. After that, I think AirAsia, it will follow by streamlining other businesses under this holding company once they assume the listing status of AirAsia Berhad.
Okay, then what are the benefits of doing this? I mean, what is it that we understand is the reason behind this move?
Well, AirAsia believes the move will help it slim its corporate structure as well as unlock the value of its investments and subsidiaries. This includes aircraft leasing and digital services. So they expect this to be completed by March 31st, 2018.
And also, we have seen this intention manifest itself given the sale of its stake in Asian Aviation Center of Excellence for some $100 million just a few days ago. I think about 5 days ago, at least that was when it was announced. And you couple that with some other potential divestments, including the involving the aircraft leasing business, also Asia Aviation Capital. So these kind of corporate moves, according to Morgan Stanley, really shows the management's commitment to monetize their non-core investments and return capital to shareholders. In other words, gives AirAsia a chance to really rejig the company, make it slimmer of sorts.
Yeah. Right. And also yesterday, AirAsia revealed their quarterly results. This is for the second quarter ended June. And you can see that their net profit was hit. It dropped by 73% to $92 million. This is for June quarter 2017. And but this is mainly due to deferred tax liabilities recorded in that quarter, because deferred tax liabilities was at $318 million.
And that was for the Indonesian unit, right? I believe so.
Yeah, it's some tax amnesty program that AirAsia is in, and because of that, they participated in that, and that is how this tax deferred liability came about.
Right, so certainly some exciting stuff happening with AirAsia in its Indonesian operations. So you've got that backdoor listing as well. Essentially, they will take over the listing status of PT Rimau Multi Putra Patrama TBK, which is a logistics and warehousing company that's already listed.
It's also a mouthful.
It is also a mouthful. They're already listed, so I believe that's a debt for securities arrangement, I believe, and that's how they'll go about being listed. Also keeping in mind, though, by the first quarter of next year, Tony Fernandez had said that he hopes that the AirAsia Philippines, he hopes their IPO over there will also be ready to roll by the first quarter of next year as well. So it looks like plenty of developments to look forward to for AirAsia.
Okay, so AirAsia's taken a hit in terms of profitability. What about other indicators, Joyce, that we have in terms of load factor or passenger yield? Do we have those numbers?
Right. The load factor rose 2 percentage points to 89%. So load factor is an indication of how full passenger aircrafts are. And passenger yield was up 11%. So passenger yield is the revenue generated by flying one passenger per 1 km. So that looks like it's increasing. The AirAsia is also planning to add 22 aircrafts by this year end to its fleet of 178 planes. So it looks like they are strengthening their position in this region. There's this whole ASEAN story going on.
And speaking of ASEAN story, how do we place AirAsia within the larger field of the aviation industry and sector? Do we have comparative numbers? Malindo, MAS and such?
I think AirAsia, it depends on which sector. I think for pure budget airplay, AirAsia is one of the top ones in this region.
Yeah, we'll have to get back to you on some more definitive numbers there, Shira.
Okay, so moving on to the other story that's just in the news. Tobacco companies want kiddie packs to make a comeback. This, of course, is the small packs. They're not necessarily targeted at people under 5 feet.
Well, some contend that is the case, but hence the name, but go on.
Yeah, but these 10-stick cigarette packs have been banned since 2010. But what the tobacco companies are arguing is that this can help stem the rise of illegal cigarettes? And how exactly do they think this is going to happen?
All right, so real quick, the big three here in Malaysia that control about 95% of the legal tobacco market, the operative word there being legal, that being BAT, that's British American Tobacco, JTI, Japan Tobacco International, and Philip Morris. So they apparently have been engaging with the government in trying to bring kiddie packs back, right? And again, the kiddie packs being those 10 stick cigarettes. In fact, JTI sent BFM some startling numbers on the use of illegal cigarettes in Malaysia. So check this out. Over 70% of youth in Malaysia actually began with illegal cigarettes. And apparently, illegal cigarettes make up more than half of the total cigarette market, almost 59% as of the first quarter of this year. And that translates to some 11 billion sticks.
And I think there's a big gap between the illegal cigarette prices versus the legal ones. I think illegal ones, we're looking at about 3 ringgit to 5 ringgit per pack of 20s, and legal ones are 12 to 17 per pack of 20s. So I think the tobacco players feel that these kiddie packs, 10 sticks per pack, will help breach this current wide price gap. But I think for me, my question is, why do they think that a 10-pack cigarette thing would help stem that? I mean, the young ones might even go...
Well, you know, right. I guess perhaps for people who are brand conscious, right? So maybe young people are not concerned about the brand because the illegal brands are all kinds of maybe nondescript brands. They're not your big name. So people who want that branded cigarette might still be attracted to the lower prices of the smaller pack.
Well, I think a big reason that's driving this conversation here is the pricing, okay? Because there's even talk right now of pushing the upper end of legal cigarettes up to beyond 20 ringgit a pack of 20, right? Right now, the upper limit is at 17. You know, you compare that with the 3 to 5 ringgit price for the illegal cigarettes, then it's a no-brainer there, especially for kids who may not have that much disposable income or really using up a big portion of their pocket money to buy these illegal cigarettes, right?
But, you know, illegal cigarettes, a big pack is like 3 ringgit or something.
Right, exactly, like 3 to 5.
I mean, yeah, make no difference to the kids, right?
So the idea here is that, at least on the side of these tobacco players, if they can bring that price point down by way of selling fewer cigarettes, 10 packs, then that could help eat into the market share that's being garnered by the illegal cigarettes as well. I mean, keeping in mind, the likes of Philip Morris as well, they have actually begun that push. Like, they're focused down at the lower end of that price range for the legal cigarettes. They're going out to 12 ringgit per pack right now. But, so you have those kind of mechanisms.
Right, but I'm not sure whether this smaller packs will also stem the whole problem of young people smoking. I mean, in general, I don't think it is. But they came on this interview with Deutsche Financial Daily, and they said that the expected outcome of 10 stick cigarettes per pack by 2020, this will, if 10 sticks per pack are reintroduced, illegal cigarettes, the sale will go down by 55%. Right. That's what they say.
I mean, we have, of course, a conversation about the price of cigarettes, but we also have the cost of cigarettes, which is about the health cost of cigarettes. Right. But, you know, yes. I personally don't feel you should take that choice out of the hands of individuals. My grandmother was a smoker, but she smoked 5 sticks a day. Quite reasonable. She lived a long and healthy life, reasonably healthy life.
And that's not a...
It's not an endorsement, but, you know.
Yeah, no, but I think to set the context here, this pushback by regulators against tobacco is not just a Malaysian-centric thing. It is across the ASEAN region. Malaysia, Singapore, and I believe Thailand as well, they're all looking to raise the smoking limit. I mean, heck, you know, President Duterte of the Philippines...
Is he going to shoot smokers now?
Well, not yet, at least. I don't know. Can't speak on his behalf.
He said you can shoot. He told the police he can shoot idiots who try to resist arrest.
He has rolled out a ban for smoking as well. I mean, even here in KL, right, there was a widening of parameters when it comes to non-smoking areas as well. So you have this pushback. So the question here is really whether or not these tobacco players have enough weapons in their arsenal to push back against tighter regulation, to push back against illegal cigarettes and also vaping, and to push back against changing lifestyles, right? You know, we are becoming a more health-conscious society. At least I would like to think so. This is like tobacco players really pushing back.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.